Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org. Additional support comes from the Jackson Laboratory, researching the root causes of cancer and other genetic diseases, designated a cancer center by the National Cancer Institute, JAX.org.
In the late 40s, Alex Pompez recognized that Willie Mays was a terrific baseball player who belonged in the major leagues. He also realized that the Birmingham Black Barons, who employed Mays before he went to work for the New York Giants, were entitled to compensation for their player. It was the latter quality which distinguished Mr. Pompez from Branch Rickey, who saw the potential for integrated Major League Baseball in Jackie Robinson, but saw no reason to pay anything to the Negro League team for which Robinson was playing. This is only one instructive nugget from the exceptionally rich life of Alex Pompez, numbers king, Negro League team owner, Major League scout, benefactor to scores of black and Latino ballplayers over several decades, and, as of 2006, Hall of Famer. When I had the opportunity to speak with Adrian Burgos Jr., who has written a biography of Alex Pompez titled Cuban Star, I began our conversation by referring to Pompez's first days as a businessman. In 1910, he had to choose between remaining in Florida, where he'd been born, heading for Cuba, where his family had lived, or moving to Harlem. I asked Adrian Burgos why Pompez had chosen Harlem.
It was, I believe, the prospect of really new opportunities in Harlem that weren't available in Cuba for him, and which were entirely not available in Tampa. Tampa had become a Jim Crow town. Not only was it a Jim Crow town, but it was very anti-labor. What we saw occur in Tampa was a series of organizing efforts and a series of lynchings. And that inspired Alex Pompez, like other Afro-Cubans, to leave Tampa and head north to New York. New York represented a new place to make community, to make new possibilities. And it also had been a long-time community for Cubans as a whole, so it offered many different new opportunities for them.
Alex Pompez became a powerful force in Harlem as a so-called numbers king. Explain what that meant.
A numbers king was one of those group of numbers bankers that ran the illegal lottery. Today's version is called the Pick Three. And he was a banker. And these bankers employed collectors, and collectors were the ones who collected the bets and the slips and a whole infrastructure of organization that went out throughout Harlem. They'd find out everywhere. He was at the very top of that. And not only was he at the top of his own numbers bank, he was also one of the biggest numbers banks in Harlem. In 1932, his numbers bank gross revenue was between $5 and $7 million, according to his own testimony. Tom Dewey, special prosecutor later in New York City, said he thought it was more like $10 to $15 million that it was grossing.
I guess it wouldn't be accurate to say that all the owners of Negro League teams built their fortunes the same way.
But most did, particularly in the Negro National League. And part of it is to understand the times in black America in the 1930s. There are very few large revenue capital producing industries that, in which black America operated in the 20s and 30s. And it so happened that the numbers was one of those industries. There was the cosmetic industry, and Madam C.J. Walker built an entire empire around black cosmetics. But there was very few industries. The black insurance industry was another. The numbers provided ready capital. And the way numbers kings were viewed was totally dependent upon, did they recycle that money into the community, or did they just line their pockets with that money? And guys like Gus Greenlee, Abe Manley, Rufus Sunny Man Jackson, and Alex Pompez were all viewed as good community men, as race men, because they recirculated that money within Pittsburgh, New York, and Newark. And that's what colored people's perception of Alex Pompez. The New York papers would call him a square dealer. He was a square shooter. He was a stand-up guy because he would constantly remain tied to his New York Harlem roots.
And when you say recirculated, in this case, it means these guys were lending money to entrepreneurs and businessmen in places like Harlem, guys who could never have gotten loans from establishment banks.
Exactly. You know, help them start up restaurants, local concerns, you know, cigar stores, candy stores. It just so happened at times that these plays doubled as a center for numbers collecting. But, you know, that's so much the better for keeping the industry going.
In their best years, the New York Cubans beat the most established Negro League teams. Luis Lefty Tiant, father of Major League standout Louis Tiant Jr., led the Stars to a Negro League World Championship back in 1947. Was that success the result of Pompez's ability as a scout?
I believe so. What was really fascinating, and Alex Pompez complained about this in the black newspapers in 1945 and 46 and into 1947. Once the Brooklyn Dodgers inked Jackie Robinson to a contract, that really opened the doors for other major league teams to begin to sign these lighter-skinned Latinos and some mulatto Latinos into the minor league system. And so Alex Pompez had to redouble his efforts to fill his roster every year as more and more were siphoned into organized baseball. And so that 1947 club that featured a young Orestes Minoso before he became many when in the major leagues, and other talented players like Silvio Garcia, a almost retired Horacio Rabbit Martinez, and Lorenzo Chiquitín Cabrera, and Claro Duane, very big names in Latino baseball. He had to convince them to come north to play for his team. And that team in 1947 would have the really fascinating misfortune of winning the Negro League World Series in the year that Jackie Robinson, just across town, was integrating the major leagues. And this is a great anecdote about what occurs. It's the pennant stretch, and the Cubans are playing against the Newark Eagles at the Polo Grounds. While the Eagles are batting, in between pitches, there's a roar that erupts from the stands, and the Cuban players start to look around, like, what's going on? Word had come across the cable wire that Jackie Robinson had hit a home run against the St. Louis Cardinals to vault the Dodgers ahead, and if the Dodgers win that game, they're going to be in first place. And that's where the attention of the black baseball fan was, at a Negro League game, no less. So that really was indicative of what Alex Pompez and others had to deal with in 1947 as Negro League entrepreneurs.
The Negro Leagues were essentially done in by integration, the integration of the major leagues in 47, although not quite immediately. How did Alex Pompez make the transition from team owner to scout for Horace Stoneham, who owned the New York Giants?
Well, their relationship started as an economic one. In 1944, Stoneham and Pompez agreed for the New York Cubans to rent out the Polo Grounds when the Giants were away. And so what began as an economic relationship after Robinson was signed, Stoneham and his scouting director, the Hall of Famer, Carl Hubble, decided, you know, we have this guy playing in our ballpark. Why don't we tap him on the shoulder and get some advice? And what Pompez did was advise him that in 47, they began to sign guys like Monty Irving. Hank Thompson would be signed in the winter of 47 into 48. And these guys would be the initial black players. But the coup that really sealed the deal for why the Giants needed a guy like Alex Pompez was the Giants signing Willie Mays. Because Alex Pompez was their inside man in black baseball. Everyone had scouts that had begun to look into the black baseball circuit, some very hesitantly because of their own personal issues about race and going into the, quote, Negro sections of town to see these Negro League teams play. But Pompez was already, that was his world. And so Pompez was able to work with Tom Hayes, who was the owner of the Birmingham Black Barons, and to convince Hayes that he was going to get his compensation for the sale or the signing of Willie Mays from the Giants, and that everyone would be taken care of. Well, let me give you an indication of how important Alex Pompez is to this process. The Birmingham Black Barons made one trip to New York City in 1948 to play at the Polo Grounds. Alex Pompez talked to his friends at the New York Amsterdam News and the New York Age and convinced them not to mention the star center fielder for the Black Barons, Willie Mays, in their coverage and not to print any box scores. And seated at that game was Stoneham and Hubble and Pompez, and they're watching Mays. And after seeing him play, Hubble was convinced they had to sign this guy. And that inside touch within that world of black baseball is what the Giants tapped into when they hired Alex Pompez to be their man.
Once famed gangster Dutch Schultz decided that he wanted to take over the numbers business in Harlem, I guess it was a good thing Mr. Pompez was able to go full-time into the baseball business.
Right, because, and again, this is an indication of how good he was at evaluating talent, that he was able to survive in just a baseball context after Schultz came in, took over the Harlem numbers racket. Then he's killed, and Pompez was forced to flee to Mexico, arrested ultimately. And we had this great scene where after testifying at the Hines trial of 1938, Pompez says, "There's, you know, I'm going strictly into baseball. There's a lot more profit in the numbers, but there's much more troubles." And as I write in the book, you know, Pompez and reemerging him and recasting himself as strictly a baseball guy, he didn't have to worry about his competitors trying to bump him off if he was too successful. And yeah, baseball is a lot safer.
You quote Felipe Alou, the former major league player and manager, as saying of Pompez that, quote, anywhere and everywhere they played baseball, Panama, Colombia, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Pompez was a legend. Was Mr. Alou exaggerating?
I don't think so. One of the fascinating things in doing the research for this book was Alex Pompez was much more well-known in his own times than in the period when we began to recover the history of the Negro Leagues. I think part of this has to do with what gets lost in translation between the Spanish-speaking part of that black baseball world, and I like to call it the black baseball world, that extended not just to Negro Leagues, but into Latin America, the Cuban League, the Puerto Rican League, the Dominican League, and crossed into the Mexican League and Venezuelan League at all. This was the domain in which Alex Pompez always operated. He would bring players out of Panama in 1921 into the Negro Leagues. He would sign the first Dominican that played in the Negro Leagues in 1926. In 1928, he would sign the first Puerto Rican to play in the Negro Leagues. And then when he became a Giant Scout, he once again would traverse these circuits and bring in talent. And with his former shortstop, Horacio Martinez, they would open the Dominican talent pipeline into the major leagues by signing the players that we know so well, Marichal, the Alou brothers, Manny Mota, and others out of the DR. And they were the ones that later on guys like Pedro Martinez himself would look up to as heroes. You know, it's Marichal. You know, that's the guy they look towards. And Alou is clearly one of the elder statesmen of the game, and not just the DR, but in all of Latin America for the stances he took throughout his career and after.
The final chapter of Cuban Star suggests that the story of Alex Pompez can be instructive to all of us living in the U.S. today, no matter what our backgrounds. What should we learn from the narrative of his life?
One of the aspects is his is an immigrant tale. He's the son of immigrants, but it shows what the first generation of U.S.-born Latinos have to navigate in this world. For him, it was about being black and Latino, being black and brown, and being bilingual, and seeing those not as a deficit, but to build on those, to make pathways into opportunity. And that is precisely what he used to open doors in his world. Being bilingual, he was able to go into the houses of both African-American players and Latino players in Latin America and speak to the parents in their native tongue. And he was able to make them feel secure. So you have a guy who had a multicultural background who used it to improve the national game because he signed guys like Willie McCovey and Willie Kirkland, as well as guys like Cepeda and Alou and others, which to me is indicative of the possibilities and the potential that many Latinos can have for our present society. And in a certain sense, Alex Pompez was a 20th, 21st century figure. He was kind of ahead of his time.
Adrian Burgos Jr. is the author of Cuban Star, How One Negro League Owner Changed the Face of Baseball. It's published by Hill & Wang. The author joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Adrian, thank you very much for speaking with me.
It's been wonderful to be back here.
My conversation with Adrian Burgos, the author of Cuban Star, How One Negro League Owner Changed the Face of Baseball, will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be speaking with ESPN's Roger Bennett about the Women's World Cup, which begins in Germany on Sunday. Only a Game's in-house producer reporters have been particularly busy this week. Karen Given will have the story of an NFL player who successfully sued the irresponsible supplement company that was responsible for his suspension. If his case was not representative, neither was it unique. Doug Trabu will explore the explosion in sports technology that's sometimes telling fans much more than they need to know just because it can. And then, for those of you who feel this week's lineup is lacking in hard sports news, we'll have the story of a golf tournament that requires competitors to avoid rattlesnakes, mountain lions, and sudden plunges into steep ravines. So join us, and remember, you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.